Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Look on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
The all-seeing, all-knowing, all-hearing eyes of the Patriots Playbook. Back at you again for another day here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook with you here on hashtag WTF Wednesday. What's the focus Wednesday? Boy, the focus is all over the place today, I got to admit. Had a hard time, really, had a hard time trying to come up with a WTF today. This was difficult because we've got so much going on. Let's retrace our steps here for just a moment. When we left you yesterday, approximately 22 hours ago, it was about 30 minutes before we heard that Akeem Ayers was headed this direction. That story broke at about 4:30 Eastern time. And one of the last things we talked about on yesterday's show, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Kevin, but because you would know this, but I believe one of the last things we talked about on the show and one of the last emails that I took yesterday on the show was, John, do you expect the Patriots to make a trade before the deadline next week?
We spent the whole day talking about potential
trades. We talked about potential trades, and then bang, a trade happens at 4:30 Eastern time.
It was just our luck.
Yeah, but we also like to look at what we think are signs, keys, what makes sense based on history. Now, I think we all realize that just because the Patriots in the last couple of years have made deals before the trading deadline doesn't necessarily signal it's going to happen again. Fact is that we thought it was likely that a deal would happen, and not only one, but potentially two deals have happened. Although we don't really know about Alan Branch. Alan Branch, of course, also was rumored to be headed this direction after having spent time with both Buffalo and Seattle over the last few years. He's actually, now been on four teams over the last 5 years. Got a little bit of a track record since he came out of, Michigan, I believe it was, in the 2007 NFL draft. He's that kind of guy in the middle, though, that the Patriots love to have. Run stopper, can play some two-gap. Disruptive force. Unfortunately, his biggest problem may be his disruptive force is not exactly all on the field. We don't really know yet. He certainly came out of college and started off with Arizona with a bang, and we're not really sure where he is at this stage of the game. All I know is that there was some talk with the PFW guys on the way out the door here a few moments ago. They're hoping to see, Branch's name on a locker somewhere in the locker room today. And if that is the case, then they do expect him to be here. But Branch allegedly has agreed to a one-year deal with the Patriots, and that's been reported by a couple of sources. And so if we get anything further to report on that, we will bring that to you. In fact, Jeff Howe, who covers the Patriots for the Boston Herald, we hope to have him in here in studio in 40 minutes before we begin some conference calls with Mark Trestman of the Chicago Bears coming up after the top of the second hour. So hopefully we can get some confirmation on either Branch and some further confirmation on Akeem Ayers. Now, Ayers was at practice today. Coach Belichick did refer to him during his news conference here earlier today. I can't say that that's a bad move. I remember when Ayers came out of school at UCLA thinking that he would actually be a pretty good choice by the Patriots. I know there was some interest in him in college before he was snatched up early in the second round. And so because of that, I think it's entirely it seems like a pretty good fit. Now, the big question is did the Patriots know about Chandler Jones before they went out and pursued Akeem Ayers with Tennessee? I guess, that's really the big X factor. It's hard to think that that would be the case, but if the initial reports on Chandler Jones of the fact that he could be out for up to a month with an alleged hip injury, then it certainly stands to reason why you'd go get a guy like Ayers, because he has been known, especially in 3-4 look, to really rush the passer. Now, say what you want about whether or not the Patriots' best defense is 3-4 or 4-3. We've seen what's been most effective thus far this year. But when you consider the tossing and turning of the personnel packages this year with the Patriots, so much like yesterday's, you know, chicken salad, I mean, it's being tossed left and right. We don't really know, and I don't think anybody can rightfully expect what kind of a lineup the Patriots are going to come out with against Chicago this Sunday. And to me, that's the biggest worry right now. We don't know who's going to play. Is Ayers going to figure into it? What about Branch? Is Jones really hurt? Who's going to step up in the middle for Mayo? Is it going to be Dante Hightower again? Man, there is a lot of flux right now on the defensive side of the ball. Tremendous amount of flux, which leads me to, you know, why arriving at the WTF for today, it was just so difficult to do. It was hard to do. So let's look at it like this. We'll bring you the latest information that we can when we have it made available to us. But because we kind of started the ball rolling yesterday, and the Patriots not only make one, but they make two trades starting about 30 minutes after we were done with the program, I'll tell you to right now, as of 2:13 Eastern time on Wednesday, and I don't mind going on the record for this because it just seems to make sense, I don't think the Patriots are done. I don't know if it'll be the blockbuster deal that we talked about on yesterday's program. And if you didn't get a chance to tune in or didn't get a chance to listen to the podcast, you know, I asked you, you know, in a perfect world, money, no object, who would you like to see in here? And we had 18 different players nominated amongst gettable players. Some were a reach, some are not a reach. But by far and away the most popular player, and I tweeted this out yesterday at the end of the program, in case you missed it, it was Ndamukong Suh. And there are reports that Suh could be made available in a trade, that Detroit would listen. I've seen those reports all over the place. I don't know that that will happen. Detroit, as we also correctly pointed out yesterday, is 5-2, and they're tied for first in their division with the Green Bay Packers. So it stands to reason they're probably not going to be willing to trade off an integral piece of the puzzle, especially with them being right smack dab in the middle of a playoff push in the NFC. I mean, they've got a legitimate shot to win it. You know, they obviously are a Patriots opponent later this year. But if they're still worried about re-signing, if they're still worried about losing him to free agency, if they're still worried about picking up salary, you know, if they're looking to shed salary, whatever they're looking to do, that's why the reports about Suh and his potential availability were in the marketplace yesterday and in a couple of days leading up to that. As we, you know, all kinds of things start flying around. As we get closer to the trade deadline next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern, you're going to continue to see stories. In fact, I got a couple of Lulus to toss at you today if you have not heard these. And I'd love to get your opinions on them. First of all, let's give you the phone number, 855-PATS-500. That's a toll-free telephone number anywhere you're listening to us, 855-PATS-500. Web radio at patriots.com, the email address. At JR Broadcaster is the Twitter handle. John.Rook is the Facebook page. R-O-O-K-E is the spelling on the name. And if you haven't submitted a friend request, please do so. Then you may post and you may chat during the program. And we take your questions live from social media, just as we do via the phone or via email. A couple of trades that I've looked at, that I've seen, one on ESPN, one on NFL.com, and you probably have seen these, so bear with me for a moment if you've already seen these and gone, ha, no friggin' way. Well, look into it a little bit further. The first one came from a guy named Greg Garber from ESPN. Some of you have probably read his stuff before. He can be a little incendiary from time to time. But he's got five trades, that he would love to see. Hypothetical transactions. There's this based on no inside information whatsoever. But his proposed trade number one is sending Patriot quarterback Tom Brady to the Houston Texans for Houston's 2015 first round draft pick and wide receiver Andre Johnson. You want to blow up Twitter? Let's say you don't like Twitter, but if you wanted to actually blow it up, that would be a good way to do it, is pull that trade off. Social media would bring the internet to a halt, literally to a standstill, I'm of the opinion, if something like that happened. Now, he actually outlines the trade and some of the instances leading into this particular deal fairly well. And we've talked about, you know, Tom's veritable work to this team, certainly prior to his current three-week run of more than 900 yards passing, you know, 9 touchdowns, no interceptions over the last 3 weeks. Looks like Tom is back to being the Tom of old and not the Tom that started out as the 31st out of 32 rated, you know, starting quarterbacks in the NFL in the first 3 weeks of the season. So I'll paraphrase here in case you've seen it, because I'm kind of hoping that this will get you to play along here today a little bit. It's fascinating to me. Patriots look indeed like they have drafted the heir apparent in Jimmy Garoppolo, regardless of what you thought about his play during the preseason or his mop-up time that you saw in the Kansas City game or what have you. You also know, and this is something that Garber points out, that Bill Belichick has in his ability to do what's best for the team. We've heard that said many, many, many times. Call it institutional arrogance, whatever you want to call it. Garber pointed that out as well, and I give him credit for the phrase because, frankly, to people outside of the Patriots organization, there's a ton of institutional arrogance, that the belief that the system in place is far, far more effective than the individuals, that they can plug players in and the system will take over and the system will produce winning football teams. Now, the crack in the armor, of course, is the fact that this institutional arrogance is only gone to a limit. It's not producing championship teams. It's still producing winning teams. And we've talked about this much during this program without really phrasing it like this. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, Belichick's way, and we've talked about in Bill, do you believe, and in Bill, do you trust, and most of you do. Not all of you, most of you do. But you'd have to say, based on the track record, the system is what is working in New England. But right now, the point is, how much do you veer from that system in order to be a champion again? And that's the thing that we're all struggling with. We're all struggling with that, including the Patriots, including Bill Belichick, including Robert Kraft, including the players in the locker room. All right, so based on what we've known in the past, Bledsoe's gone, Lawyer Malloy, Ty Law, Damian Woody, Richard Seymour, Mike Vrabel, Wes Welker, Logan Mankins, all named players that at one point in time or another you said, oh, we can't do without this guy, that this guy's valuable, this guy brings a lot to this team, and they've all been shipped. Now, keep in mind that we all know that Bill O'Brien was a part of this organization for a few years. Bill O'Brien was Brady's quarterback coach. Bill O'Brien was Brady's offensive coordinator. He loves Tom Brady as we all love Tom Brady. Why wouldn't the Texans want to do that? That gives them absolute 110% legitimacy. That gives them a huge boost. Although you could argue that Houston's defense isn't all that with J.J. Watt and some of those that they have playing behind him. Jadeveon Clowney is, injured, has been injured, really hasn't had an impact yet. But let's say if they got it together, what would be the one missing piece of the puzzle in Houston? Quarterback, still, with all due respect to Ryan Fitzpatrick. All right, so here are the mechanics as broken down by ESPN. Now, to trade Brady before June the 1st, the Patriots would carry $18 million in dead money. That's the money left in his signing bonus. Brady's contract next year becomes fully guaranteed. In fact, for the next 3 years, becomes fully guaranteed if he's on the roster for the last game of this season. And we have already spoken of that on this program. So there's a precedent based on what the Colts did with Peyton Manning a few years ago. There's a precedent for a large number when a salary is replaced by a rookie contract. That's going to be some serious dead money the Patriots would have to swallow. But in return, you allow your quarterback of the future to take the reins. You also get a huge piece of the puzzle in a first-round draft pick, wherever Houston ends up this year. So you'd have, in theory, two ones at your disposal to completely, or at least to continue the rebuilding process. And you get the coveted wideout, even at the tail end of his career, but you get the coveted wideout in a guy like Andre Johnson, who a lot of people thought might end up coming here when he had his contract holdout with Houston earlier in the preseason. Now, you might think it's garbage. It certainly is interesting. There's a lot of precedent in terms of what has happened to previous star quarterbacks in the NFL. Joe Montana, most, you know, memorable to me anyway, being sent packing by the 49ers along with a player and a third-round pick for a first-rounder to Kansas City. You remember that? Now, my guess would be if that deal was actually talked about, if it were actually talked about, Patriots would probably opt for a different player, somebody younger, but I don't know. It's intriguing. Now, on NFL.com, they put together a list of six trades that they think make sense. Not so much deals that they would like to see, but trades that they feel make sense as we approach next Tuesday's trading deadline. One of the six deals is Larry Fitzgerald to the Patriots. And I'll read it to you here. It says, even with the Cardinals standing atop the NFC West, there are valid reasons for a swap. Fitzgerald realizes his contract will have to be addressed after the season as he carries an untenable $23.6 million salary cap number for the Patriots, for 2015. And the Patriots apparently reportedly have sent out feelers to gauge the possibility of acquiring Fitzgerald two off seasons ago. I believe that most of you, if you follow the team closely enough, you remember a couple years ago when you heard or you saw the reports out there the Patriots were definitely interested in Larry Fitzgerald but just never pulled the trigger on a deal. Well, the article goes on to say Fitzgerald's legs looked as fresh in August as they did in his prime, but his targets have dwindled since Bruce Arians removed him from the ex-receiver role. Now that Michael Floyd and Andre Ellington are enjoying breakout seasons and rookie John Brown is emerging, Fitzgerald is underutilized in Arians' offense. I believe, and this is the reporter here for NFL.com, I believe he would flourish as Tom Brady's first legitimate outside threat since the last of Randy Moss's glory years. Cardinals could get something in return now if they have reason to believe he would walk in the offseason. All right, Patriots fans. What do you think? Which of those two deals do you like and why? Which do you think is preposterous and why? Patriots sending Tom Brady to Houston for a first-round pick and Andre Johnson, or Larry Fitzgerald coming to the Patriots? And again, you're probably talking about giving, if the Cardinals feel Larry Fitzgerald will walk in the offseason, it certainly would be a high pick. I don't think it'd be a one, and I don't think the Patriots would give up a one for Larry Fitzgerald. There's no way they'd give up a one unless a long-term deal was already renegotiated. Would you give up a two? You'd probably at least give up a three for Larry Fitzgerald, would you not? And I think if you're the Cardinals, you'd probably take a two, wouldn't you? Which is more likely to happen, which is pure unadulterated BS in your estimation? They both have merit. They both hit on key topics. They both hit on needs. They both seem to make at least a little bit of sense. But, boy, they are wow factors. And you're talking about, you know, the Brady deal would be one that would rip Twitter and social media all to shreds if that were to happen. Fitzgerald sounds to me like it would be more likely or certainly more reasonable. But even right now, I'm not so sure that's the blockbuster kind of deal that still lays in waiting for the Patriots. I do believe the Patriots have another deal in them before next Tuesday, but I think that there are several things that they're probably kicking the tires on right now. They're waiting to hear back, I'm sure, from a lot of people. Depends a lot, I think, on what really happens with Alan Branch on the defensive line and if he is a part of this team. I'd still love to see them, you know, just go to Detroit and say, all right, what would it take to get Ndamukong Suh out of your clutches? As the majority of our respondents yesterday also replied to. Lots of things to think about here. But right now, because if you don't have Chandler Jones, isn't defense really the top priority? I mean, both of those alleged trades I just brought to mind, those are offensive trades. But isn't defense, if Chandler Jones is gone for a month and you're getting ready to embark on this six-game stretch that clearly is going to make or break your season, isn't defense the biggest need right now? 855-PATS-500, webradio at patriots.com, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. I've given you a lot to think about, so I hope that you will do me the favor and do some thinking about it and see what you think. And then let me know what you're thinking via one of these routes. Let's start it off today in the playbook, and we're going to go overseas. Lars in Sweden joined us here in the playbook. Hey, Lars, how's it going today?
Good, John. Good to be on the air.
Glad you're with us.
Thank you. Well, I wanted to make a suggestion. I want to know if you think it's, if you agree with it, if you think it's realistic. I think I agree with some of the people say and probably take advantage of the Buccaneers situation and maybe grab one of their players on their team. Vincent Jackson, maybe not, but I would go on defense and maybe trade Aaron Dobson for Lavonte David if that's any possible. What do you think about that?
Repeat that last part again. Trade who for who now?
Trade Aaron Dobson, our player, for Lavonte David. The Buccaneers linebacker.
Well, again, you know, we can get into all kinds of, well, you know, this guy should go for this guy scenario. But whenever you're talking trade, you have to have two willing partners. And, you know, and if the partner is willing, the player that you're willing to, that you want to give up may not be the player that they're interested in. So that's why I have a hard time in saying, well, what do you think about this deal? Because frankly, I don't know that the Patriots have a need. I don't know that the Patriots have an interest in David that you're talking about. They've gone out and gotten Akeem Ayers already. So, you know, is there still a need? And I think they're probably still, as I suggested a few moments ago, Lars, in the evaluation stage. They'll probably go through practice over the next few days and continue evaluating Ayers and deciding. And again, you got to remember, Akeem Ayers is coming off of two knee surgeries, two of them. And along the same lines of a guy like Dominic Easley, they got to figure out, you know, he was only active for two games this year with Tennessee. And so, you know, is that because he just didn't fit in their plans, or is that because he was ailing, or is it a little bit of both? So I don't think they make a decision on him, and I really don't think they probably look at anything other than what he can provide until they make the decision on him. Does that make sense at all to you?
Well, yes and no, because we, you know, you and I, we don't have the exact profile that they have on him, so we have to wait a couple of games to see exactly what he can do to make a conclusion.
And that's also true. And as far as giving up Aaron Dobson, well, again, you know, Dobson's only been eligible. He's only been activated for two games. It doesn't sound like he right now is in the forefront of the Patriots' plans, but would he be a guy that, you know, Tampa would covet? We don't know how other teams look at the New England players. Now, unless, you know, you've got information that says otherwise, that's why it's really hard to play, hey, would you trade so-and-so for so-and-so? Because, I mean, it might sound good on paper, but unless, you know, both teams are willing to deal, there's no deal. And so we're kind of spinning our wheels.
That's true. I just have one question, more general, but
sure.
Who right now for you are your top two teams in the AFC that you have in the NFC game?
Best two teams in the AFC right now?
NFC.
In the NFC right now. Well, Dallas has got to be one. And I think you got to stay with Dallas only because right now they got the best record in the league. They're 6-1. I being a longtime Cowboy fan, going back to, when I was just a little kid, because I grew up in that part of the country, I will believe Dallas when I see Dallas actually have success in the postseason. And whatever they do in the regular season with a guy like Tony Romo at quarterback is one thing, but since he's had abysmal failure in the postseason, I'm not going to look at the Cowboys as legitimate until I see him win a game or two. So I'm going to kind of set that aside, but based on right now, you'd have to put Dallas there at 6-1. And based on the way they're playing right now, I got Green Bay right behind them. So I would have to go with Dallas and Green Bay, and the Patriots obviously will play Green Bay coming up in about another month, and I think that'll be a huge factor. It's part of this six-game stretch that I referred to that really is going to make or break this season, and we talked about that at the very start of this year, that this stretch, in late October through all of November is going to be easily the Patriots' toughest stretch, and that's with coming off of four games in 18 days being played.
That is indeed.
Anything else, Lars?
No, that was it. And okay, well, thanks a lot. And maybe see you on another show.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for taking the time to call us today. Lars, overseas in Sweden. Let's go, let's stay on this side of the pond. Gary's in Ohio. Hey, Gary, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good, sir.
I think it's preposterous that somebody would even mention Trayton Brady.
See, I really expected that to be the overwhelming sentiment. But when you look at the trade, when you look at it, I mean, if you're really serious about building and lengthening out the success of this franchise over a number of years, which is something the Patriots purportedly have said they want to do, I don't know that you can outright dismiss it.
Well, I mean, not right now. It's not time right now.
He's
doing too good.
Let me just play devil's advocate for a second, Gary. I'm just doing this for the sake of argument and for the sake of conversation. Isn't the best time to trade somebody when they have some value? And doesn't Tom Brady have value now as opposed to a month ago?
Yes.
Okay. That's why you see these things come out.
But this ain't Wes Walker. This ain't Mike Vrabel. This ain't Richard Seymour. This is Tom Brady. I do not see Robert Kraft one. I think he would overstep Belichick on it. I really do. I don't see it happening.
I don't think that would happen. I think Mr. Kraft and the Kraft family have been 110% behind Bill in the football decisions. And I think if Bill Belichick decided this was in the best interest of the football team, there's a well-worn trite phrase, right? But if it is in the best interest of the team, he would do it, and he would back him.
Well, first of all, the first-round pick in Andre Johnson, that ain't I wouldn't do that trade regardless. I mean, you're going to have to trade off Ray, you're going to need a first-round pick, and you're going to need a stud. That's what you're going to need. J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, is that going to happen? No. Just like we ain't going to trade Brady.
Okay, you might have some merit with that one. I think Andre Johnson would be a little long in the tooth. I think they got a guy named DeAndre Hopkins that might be more to their liking because he's, 22, 23 years old?
Yeah, but we're talking about one of the best, arguably, quarterbacks of all time. And he's still playing lights out. I think Bill Belichick does what's best for the team. And what's best for the team is to keep Tom Brady.
All right, Gary, let me ask you something. How old are you, if you don't mind my asking?
I'm 32.
Okay. You don't remember when the San Francisco 49ers traded Joe Montana, do you?
Well, yeah, my father was a 49ers fan, so I grew up watching that.
Okay.
Yeah, I do remember.
All right. And so as a 49ers fan, the initial reaction had to be the world was coming to an end, didn't it?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I'm saying here. There is precedent.
Apples to oranges.
No! What do you mean apples to oranges? This is apples to apples, my friend. We're talking about the trading of a Hall of Fame, alleged all-time best quarterback ever. It's already happened. It's already happened.
But was Montana the player that Brady is right now when he got traded?
I think you could argue that they had a better replacement waiting in a guy like Steve Young. Than they had, than maybe the Patriots have right now, Jimmy Garoppolo. But that's only because Garoppolo is unproven, and Steve Young had a track record through his play in the USFL at the time, 30 years ago, if you'll recall.
Exactly. So they knew what they had. They don't know what they got with Garoppolo. For goodness sake, he didn't even have a playbook in college. It's just absurd to even – it's ridiculous.
Okay.
It's not going to – you know it's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen either. But when I saw the story, I said, well, you know what? You know, as much as I want to, you know, fire off and say this guy is a goofball – it actually got me thinking, and really, that's the major idea behind, you know, a lot of the information that I read, you know, from guys that I respect, you know, whether they're a journalist or just a muckraker. If it gets me thinking and thinking, that's kind of interesting, then it's done its job. I mean, it's, you know, I'm certainly looking for information, and I'm looking for insight, but I'm also looking for common sense, and I'm also looking for things that are said between the lines, you know? Everybody wants to be able to read between the lines. And based on everything we've seen and everything that this team has said that it wants to do and this coach has said he wants to do for the betterment of this team and the football franchise overall, this is something, quite frankly, that could happen. It just could. But it may not happen in the next week. I don't think it will. It certainly may not happen in the next year, but it could happen.
It could happen, but it ain't going to happen this year. I just don't see it. I don't see it at all. I don't see it. It's even a possibility. I don't think it's in their mind. I think they'd have to be blown away, just blown away. And I don't think nobody's going to blow them away.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, you know, I think blowing the Patriots away to get them to budge on such a deal would require one of those studs that you were talking about, and I don't think that that's going to happen either. But keep in mind, you know, if there was ever a willing partner, you'd have to say that Bill O'Brien and the Texans would be that team.
Well, yeah, of course. But now, as far as what we need, as far as the trade we get,
yeah,
you know as well that we ain't going to go out and get no star player. It just ain't. If it was going to happen, I feel like it would already happen.
Well, they did go out and get Tlaib 2 years ago. Now, all right,
they did.
Okay,
and they got a track record for doing that, but I don't see it this year. I just don't. I think Belichick's going to stick with what he has. I do. He's doing something weird with the defense on this hybrid anyway. So I just think he's going to stick with what he has. I mean, I think we have what we're going to have through the year. And I think once we get more healthy with Jones back, I mean, that's terrible to hear about him. That's hurt. I think we're going to be a contender when it's all said and done.
Yeah, but isn't the clock kind of ticking here, Gary? That's what concerns me the most. This clock is tick-tocking right, you know, toward, you know, a really crucial time in this season. And this team, you know, seems to be doing a little bit of scrambling right now. And there's not a lot of information that's out there. And so, you know, it's a big, big question mark right now. I don't know that this team, you know, if they're going to try to reconstitute themselves, I don't think there's enough time to do it.
Well, I think that this is what this team is. This is what the team always has been. They fight through adversity. And I think this is what defines the team. You know, we're in a tough stretch now, and this will be what defines us. But you look at history, we've always made it to these points. And I think we will this year, too.
Okay.
One, because of our offense and because of Brady.
That's a fair comment. And thank you for the phone call, Gary. I appreciate the input. I just, you know, it's one thing to deal in generalities, but, you know, I'm trying to find some specifics. And right now, there's just nothing specific to tell you. We can't even tell you specifically, other than Akeem Ayers is here, that this team is doing anything about the perceived needs that we're all talking about. James in Tampa, Florida, up next in the playbook. Hi, James.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. How
thanks, James. Appreciate it.
All right. I just wanted to mention, talk about the Sue trade. I would love to see Donovan and Sue with the Patriots. Main reason is because you never know what may happen to Wolford. He got injured last year, and look what happened to our run defense. For God's sake, if he gets hurt, who do we have? I just can't picture anyone else, you know, doing the job that we need. So I'd love to see Sue with the Patriots, not Fitzgerald. We don't need an offensive player. We have Brian Timms. He came from the 49ers, and he's a stud. I like what I saw from the Buffalo Bills. Fast, has great hands. I don't think we need a receiver. LaFell's starting to become a great player. He's been with us just a few months. He will improve. He'll get a lot better. So I don't think we need Fitzgerald, Vincent Jackson. We can save our draft picks. But we do need a stud defensive player. That'll be Sue. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I would love to see it happen. We talked about it yesterday, and I'd love to see that happen. I personally don't think that they're going to pull off a deal like that, as much as I'd love to see it happen. I have a feel that they're not quite done yet. Like I said earlier, before next Tuesday's deadline, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to make a deal. I just seem like, you know, it looks to me like they're trying to put pieces of a puzzle together. And they're not sure what puzzle pieces they need yet, because the current puzzle is still a little bit jumbled up. And by that I mean, well, I'm not sure they were really counting on Chandler Jones and his unavailability apparently over the course of the next month. And so now there might be a further need that they would go out and pursue. You know, there are a lot of question marks right now, and there are a lot of guys out there that could be had. And quite frankly, I'm not sure that anybody has the answers. I'd love to get him. In a perfect world, I'd love to have him, because he's nasty. He brings a mindset, and he would be a difference maker. And that's something that everybody needs. But, you know, you got to have two parties willing to dance. You know, Detroit's right in the mix of things as well. I don't know that you'd find a willing dance partner. And even if you did, the price that they ask would probably be quite high.
Now, what if we give them Dobson? Because they need another receiver. And let's say maybe a second-round pick. We could go with first-round pick. Would that be possible? What do you think?
Dobson for what now?
Oh, Dobson and a first-round pick for Sue with a long-term contract.
Here's the problem with this. You know, everybody wants to give up Aaron Dobson because he's fallen back on the Patriots' depth chart, so to speak.
Yeah.
But nobody's understanding what I'm saying here. The other team has to like the player too. So if he's at the bottom of your depth chart, why would Detroit want him? They have a guy named Calvin Johnson. You've heard of him, right?
Yes, and Golden Tate.
Yeah. So why would they want Aaron Dobson? Is there even room for him on that roster? You can't just give up a player, you know, and thinking that the other team's going to lay down and say, oh, thank you so much. Oh, thank you for giving us Aaron Dobson. It's not going to happen. So, you know, Dobson and a one for Sue? No, that's not going to happen. It'll never happen, not in a million years, because Detroit doesn't have that as a need. If Detroit needed anything, Detroit would need a draft pick. Detroit would probably want a couple of bodies, you know, and Detroit would certainly want you to pick up the salary, which you'd have to do anyway. Because, you know, right. Now if Ndamukong Suh left that lineup, don't they have now a big need in the middle?
Yes.
Okay. So then you could see, you know, maybe, all right, well, so maybe we give you Casey Walker, or maybe we give you, you know, Chris Jones, or maybe we give you Joe Villano, or a combination of two of those guys plus a pick. And I mean, you could see something like that more than you could see, hey, how about Aaron Dobson? They don't even need Aaron Dobson. What they need is somebody to replace the big man they just gave up. And on top of that, they'd have their own fan base to deal with. What are you doing? You know, you're killing us. We're tied for first place, and you're trading maybe our best player? Are you kidding me? You know, that's
what they get to Rodgers if they don't have Sue. So, yes, it makes sense.
Exactly. Exactly. So you got to look at it from the other team's perspective, too.
Yes, it must be something that they want for them to give that kind of player.
Yeah. No question.
All right.
No question. I mean, James, I'd love to have it happen. And that's why we talked about it yesterday. And that's why the discussion is up for, you know, debate again today. And with the way that the Patriots made two smaller moves yesterday after we're done, this is what's on fire right now, simply because this team has big holes to fill, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And we don't know who or how or what they're going to fill them with. So that's why all of this is up for discussion.
But do you believe we need Vincent Jackson? Yeah, I heard you talk about it. Yes, I'm always listening to your show.
And I appreciate it.
I love it.
Thank you,
no
James.
No problem. But do you think we need Vincent Jackson, knowing Brian Timms, he's, you know, getting better? It's just came off
all right.
Four-game suspension. Do you think we need it?
Well, James, you're in Tampa, so you tell me what are local people saying about Vincent Jackson and whether or not you want to keep him or send him?
We still have a chance. We here in Tampa, because every team in our division is slacking. We're just one game behind the lead, so I don't think we Buccaneers would just give them out for, you know, a third round pick or anything like that. They I don't know. I doubt it. I highly doubt it.
Okay.
But
Well,
it would be very interesting.
It was suggested and has been suggested by several sources, and again, doesn't take much to Google it and figure it out for yourself, that Jackson could be had in trade talks for the right price. So there are teams that send out feelers and send out, you know, hey, woodjas to teams all over the league and say, so-and-so could be had. If you've got something, let's talk. That happens all the time through inner channels, all the time. And his name has come up more than once. And the Patriots, obviously, the one thing that, you know, that might be missing on offense would be the need for a game breaker. That has been discussed. We've discussed it here. It's been discussed in a lot of other places. Now, that may not be the primary need right now. I don't think it is, based on what we've seen now with the apparent demise of Chandler Jones for the next month. But you have to admit, and I said this, you know, in yesterday's playbook, I said it's an intriguing deal at the very least if you had a guy like him to throw to.
Okay.
That's all.
All right. Thank you.
Nothing
so much
more
for
than
your
that.
Answers.
Thanks, James. Appreciate the time, and I appreciate your phone call. All right, let's sort of let's recap and regroup here and give you a chance to sound off. Let me very quickly. I want to read this this Facebook post from Noe in Bakersfield, California, who says, "Brother, you obsess way too much about getting rid of Tom Brady. When you do that, it's when I turn off my Patriots app on my iPhone. Just too obsessive. You must have some kind of agenda against him that you'd, of course, never admit, but the content of almost every one of your shows proves it." Noe, I have no freaking idea what you're talking about. All we're doing here is talking about Tom Brady, our appreciation for him, and all I'm doing is just basically regurgitating what's already out there on the net. Not once did I say today, we need to trade Tom Brady. That did not happen. Not once. Not once. So clearly, Noe, maybe you need to kind of clear your ears a little bit because you don't know what you're hearing. I mean, seriously. You need to understand it. Obsessed, really? Okay. What do you? I would think that all Patriots fans are somewhat obsessed with a guy who could be considered maybe the greatest quarterback of all time. You can make the argument. I think that's part of it. So you know, hey, I love you, brother, but you know, obsessed over getting rid of him? No. What I'm looking at is if you're really in truth trying to think about improving your football team, as Bill Belichick always says he's doing. He's trying to do what's in the best interest of the football team and the franchise. Then you're always thinking a step ahead. And history does have a sneaky way of revisiting and repeating itself in a league like the NFL. It happens. You don't have to go too far back. I realize that you're probably not old enough to remember when Joe Montana was let go by the San Francisco 49ers, but it did happen. And there was a huge cry and hue from the West Coast that went for years until he was enshrined in the Hall of Fame over whether or not that was the right move. And they even had Steve freaking Young to back him up. These things happen. So much so, now that national mainstream media is picking up on these and say, hey, isn't this an intriguing idea? And that's why I brought up the piece on from Garber on ESPN Today. And the piece from NFL.com today. I had nothing to do with obsessing over that. So you need to kind of open up your ears and listen to what we're saying here, fella, because quite frankly, you don't know. I'm glad to be joined now in studio by Jeff Howe, who covers the Patriots for the Boston Herald. And in between sort of your duties here at the stadium, what are you on your way to, Jeff, by the way?
Let's see. Trying to take it 1 minute at a time here. In between the locker room and heading back to the Bears conference calls, which I apparently are going to start in the 3 o'clock hour. I'm not sure.
We're not sure, but we're waiting on those anyway.
Right.
What are your thoughts overall about, first of all, the two alleged deals? One of them we know has happened. We haven't seen any signs yet of the big defensive lineman yet from ex-Buffalo guy Alan Branch. Or has anybody seen his locker? Is there a nameplate somewhere in the locker room? Is he going to be a Patriot? Do we even know?
Well, Akeem Ayers is officially here, and he right. doesn't even have his own nameplate right now. Okay. So Alan Branch doesn't have one yet. I'm curious as to what's going on with that. I wonder if there was maybe a travel snag or something with his workout. I have no idea. But it's coming from reliable enough people to think that this thing has actually happened or is in the process of happening. I'll start with Branch first. He is a guy, I remember when he was cut by the Bills, he had some off-field problems, the DUI, I think it was, And then he wasn't also playing up to his standard, not in, in the facet that Alan Branch was playing to earn that big contract that he got. And I remember the reaction from the Buffalo media after the release was, well, you kind of could see this one coming. Then he was a free agent for quite a while. So you never know what to expect. You can't really have huge expectations for a veteran with a proven track record who comes in this late in the season after the rest of the NFL has essentially passed up on him. Akeem Ayers is an interesting one. Another guy that, again, you really can't really put it in pen as to what you can get out of this guy. A second-round pick in 2011. We know his credentials. A talented pass rusher, was, what, 104, 110 tackles back in 2012, six sacks. Had, I looked back at all nine of his career sacks this morning. Eight of them came off the defensive edge, whether it was a defensive end in a 4-3 or just as an extra linebacker playing off the end of the line. So a guy who is, you should look at as more of an edge player in Bill Belichick's system, whether it's at a 4-3 or a 3-4. I think immediately they can put him in pass rush situations before they kind of unload the full playbook on him and see if he can play in space as a linebacker in the second level there. But yeah, I mean, we'll see, because he's got the two patellar tendon surgeries too, and those are major injuries, something that Mayo is gonna
going
to deal with
now,
eventually.
Yeah.
So these are, I mean, I talked to a trainer last week, a guy who has dealt with high profile NFL players when Mayo went down, and said that the patellar tendon guys do not come back and look the same way. They all of them lose a step after that surgery. So what can you expect there? He was a healthy scratch in 5 of 7 games under Wisenhunt in the new system from Ray Orton. So is it an injury thing? He wasn't on the injury report. So maybe he just fell out of favor down there. And again, I mean, Bill Belichick said today, we'll see what the role is going to be. And a lot of people on Twitter were like, oh, here we go again. But you know what? Cut the guy some slack here. Until in a situation like this, where it's been so long since Ayers has really gone out and proven anything, it really is a we'll see situation.
Yep, and they've got to work him out. And I'm wondering if you think maybe the Patriots, went into the whole, search for a guy like Ayers, knowing that they may be without a guy like Chandler Jones for a while.
Yeah, and I think that's the bigger one than Mayo. I think they're trying to answer Jones much more than Mayo with the Ayers acquisition. And just because he is a pass rusher, and they need a guy with a little bit of a veteran presence back there. I mean, Zach Moore could step in. Dominique Easley could step in. But we all know those guys have very limited experience. And Easley's coming back from his own injuries. Moore has gotten very limited playing time in his first season. So it's a situation where they are lacking depth. I wonder if Ayers comes in and, in a best-case scenario, picks up the defense fairly quickly and is able to play as sort of a space linebacker, and they're able to put Hightower back in that edge pass rushing position a few more times per game, as opposed to what they would have been able to do earlier, or maybe not being able to trust Deontay Skinner to play in those pass rushing downs in the middle to get Hightower closer to the line. So but I think the depth, like you said, I think it's more about Chandler Jones than it is about Jerod Mayo.
Yeah, it just tells me, though, that, for those that were questioning whether or not Jones had a legitimate injury, he wasn't at practice today, clearly, it just sounded to me, when I heard yesterday, half an hour after we're done with this show, the news of the deal was coming down, I said, Chandler Jones thing, there's got to be something to it. Because Ayers is not the quintessential inside guy to replace a guy like Mayo, as you just suggested. He's been more of an outside guy. It also tells me we might be seeing a shift somewhat personnel-wise. This team has tried, and we've seen it better at protecting and stopping the run in 4-3 or 5-2 fronts. Now we might not be seeing that because of the personnel that's actually healthy enough to play.
Well, I think the big thing for them is to just get away from the two gap. I think you can play, the two gap really comes hand in hand with the 3-4. But if you can kind of get these guys to go downhill, I think that's when you've seen the defensive linemen be more effective. And it went all the way back to last season when they went to a 3-4 two gapping system when they were trying to recover from Mayo and Wilfork the first time around. And that's when Hightower struggled linemen weren't able to eat up the blocks. And that Miami game the Kansas City game too, when they couldn't stop the run, it was because I think the defensive linemen were given too much of the burden, and you had guards and centers pulling, a design double team, and they realized, hey, the guy next to me has this guy locked up one-on-one. Now I can go get to Jamie Collins, or I can get to Dante Hightower. And then the next thing you know, you got a running back who's not even getting touched until he's 7 yards off the line of scrimmage.
Right.
So whether it's a 3-4, 4-3 or whatever, I think the two-gap system has to be erased because it's putting a little too much stress on guys who haven't been able to handle it, and they're coming back from their own injuries too. I mean, how many of these defensive linemen truly are completely healthy? I mean, Will Fork is, but he's still coming off a major injury. Easily two injuries right now. And go right down the line.
Chris Jones as well had an ankle injury earlier this year. Right. So, you know, and thank you for the explanation, because I think there are a lot of people that don't really understand the difference. Usually the stretch is made, well, if you hear 3-4, that it's an automatic two-gap type of system where the guys up front basically are taking on two blockers and it's up to the linebackers to come up and make the plays. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have those guys do exactly what you said. Those guys can make more of a straight ahead move. They can try to penetrate. They can just try to go one on one. But it usually also means, though, if you're really a 3-4, somebody from that linebacking core is up on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why you've seen some versatility, flexibility from these guys, just trying to disguise it with Chandler Jones or Rob Ninkovich playing as linebackers, if you want to call them that, in the 3-4. But they're edge players, end-of-the-line players. Again, that's what Akeem Ayers should do. Guys who can drop into coverage, it's not their strength, but they are adept enough to handle it in order for them to have some ambiguity with the defense.
All right, Jeff Howe, the Boston Herald, stopping by for a couple of moments as interviews get underway down the hallway here at Gillette Stadium. What do you think the biggest need right now is for this team? If Ayers, you know, checks out okay, whether or not Branch comes in or what have you, do you think that it's still possible this team could make another move of some kind before the trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they could, and I have a hard time forecasting this stuff because, I mean, Tlaib, in hindsight, yeah, okay, the Tlaib thing made sense. He ran his course in Tampa Bay, and the Patriots needed a cornerback. It worked out swimmingly. But that's right. About as good of a case scenario as you could possibly hope for at the trade deadline. Nobody saw Isaac Sopoaga coming. Nobody saw Akeem Ayers coming. But you need a situation like that. A guy who, I mean, Sopoaga had a bigger contract, and the Patriots eventually had to eat a little bit of money to release him this year. But a guy who had worn out his welcome in Philadelphia because he wasn't performing. Akeem Ayers, a guy who wore out his welcome in Tennessee under a new coaching staff and was a healthy scratch a bunch of times. So you need to find situations like that. Or, I mean, very rare is the situation when you've got a team that is underperforming and then just has a fire sale. This isn't baseball and stuff like that. I mean, the biggest name out there that I think, I don't know if it's realistic. I have no idea if Tampa Bay is even talking about him. But Vincent Jackson, if you want to devote a wish list, you look at a guy like Vincent Jackson. He has a relatively affordable contract that they would take on, maybe $7 to $8 million in cap hits a year. I think you can get out of it fairly easily because the trading team usually takes on the brunt of the debt, or takes on all of the dead money. It's just the bonus money you got to worry about, and there's not too much there. So yeah, I mean, but then what's the guarantee he comes in and picks up the system and so on and so forth? So that's why, even though you could look at a Vincent Jackson and say financially they could swing it, and he was a guy who would answer a question or help him. I mean, Vincent Jackson has contributed in every offense he's ever been in. Look at the quarterback situation down there. Of course, you would like to think that he could come in and have a few good games down the stretch, but these situations are so few and far between to just look at it and say, you know what, that makes perfect sense. It's definitely going to happen. It's the NFL. It's a total wild card.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Is there anything out there that you would say would be off limits, or any player on this team that would be off limits in terms of trying to move or do something? I mean, I referred to the Greg Garber story, which you may or may not have seen on ESPN today, about, hey, one of the five blockbuster trades that we'd love to see happen was Tom Brady to the Houston Texans for a first-round pick and Andre Johnson. I mean, is there still a place for something like that in this day and age of the NFL?
Well, Brady isn't going anywhere. I don't know if the player for player swaps are even more rare
exactly
than the draft pick for player swaps. So, right. Yeah, I didn't read any of them, but I saw the hypotheticals that were thrown out there in that storyline or the series that they put up there. I think it went up today or whatever. I don't know if any of those are realistic. I think
NFL.com also did one, and they had Larry Fitzgerald headed this way.
See, that one I don't buy. That one's totally off the radar, because that is a first-place team that just front-loaded all of their money the Cardinals, again, for what's their record? 6-1,
yeah,
5-1.
Five and one.
They have a 2-game lead in the NFC West. They're going to need Larry Fitzgerald if they have any hopes of hanging on to that lead down the stretch, which is going to be really difficult. But worst case scenario, they stumble a bit and what, maybe 10-6, they're a playoff team.
I know they've got some other younger receivers, though, that they do like, and it doesn't seem like he's being targeted as much this year.
No, and you're totally right about that. But then there's the other part of it where you've got a GM or a head coach or an owner who is going to have trouble stomaching paying a guy upwards of $20 million to play for another team. And I don't care how much money you have.
Probably not going to work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, imagine sliding that across the owner's desk and saying, hey, you know what? We don't really use this guy all that much. Would you mind paying $20 million for him to take the Patriots to the Super Bowl?
Not probably going to happen.
Right.
Well, I think one of the things is that this is certainly turning out to be a rather active, you know, week before the trade deadline, and probably made a little bit more active because of some of the uncertainty the Patriots have in their own roster. The Patriots are 5-2. They're right in the thick of things. They're on top of the division by a game. I guess the major question, and one of the major questions we've had for our fans today is, quite frankly, how do you fill the apparent holes that exist? And it seems like they're trying to get there, but when the information and even some of the players are slow to get here, you can understand some of the frustration, I think.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think this is just it stems from maybe not going all the way for a pass rusher in the offseason. And there's got to be some frustration there, too, because Jared Allen, who's coming to town this weekend, Julius Peppers, and DeMarcus Ware, the three biggest pass rushers on the market, all went to three contenders. I mean, three teams that I know the Bears have had some struggles, but the Packers, the Bears, and the Broncos all landed those three guys for all upwards of $10 million a year. Some of that is phony money, but the Patriots have $14 million in cap space right now. That's an instant second guess. Now that Chandler Jones is hurt, even if he wasn't, I thought you need 3 to 4 really solid rotational pass rushers for these elite defenses. I mean, you just go back to this stat that I recited a gajillion times this offseason. Chandler Jones and Rob Ninkovich each played 95%+ of the snaps last year,
yep,
which both of those guys led all of their peers in the NFL. You look at the Seahawks, who are the best pass rush in the league. They didn't have a single defensive end play 60% of their snaps. So when you have a quality rotation, you avoid wearing those guys down. Ninkovich into his 30s now. Chandler Jones has struggled in the second half of each of his first two seasons, now dealing with another injury. So you always want to give those guys as much help as you possibly can.
All right, Jeff, thanks for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thanks for the insight. Jeff Howe covers the Patriots for the Boston Herald. Let's take a break here, and we'll come back and get restarted again. Again, we're talking mostly about the trade deadline, the possibilities here. We threw out a couple of hypotheticals that were out there, you know, whether or not you believe that they could actually have any truth to them at all or not. But in your estimation, what is realistic and what isn't right now? What's the biggest perceived need for this Patriots team before the trade deadline next Tuesday? And do you feel that the Patriots will step up and potentially do something about it? Have they already? 855-PATS-500, the number. Webradio@patriots.com. Got a lot of emails. We'll start getting to those coming up. At JR Broadcaster on Twitter and John.Rook on Facebook. All right, ready, set, and go.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
Before Jenny met her new nephew Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Want to step inside the playbook? Hit up John toll-free on the Ace Ticket hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, back to the man, the myth, the legend himself, John Rook.
Legend in my own mind, perhaps, but that's about it. That's about the extent of it today. Welcome back. Hour number two, Patriots Playbook. Still trying to decipher a bit of the whole effect of bringing in Akeem Ayers, which did happen about 30 minutes after we talked about the possibility of the Patriots making a deal yesterday. Still also mentioning that defensive lineman, ex-Bills defensive lineman Alan Branch looks like he's on his way to New England. although we're not entirely certain right now. Something's up there, but we'll as soon as we're able to get the news to you, if you see it out there somewhere in the Twitter sphere, that's great. Pass it on, and we'll pass it on to our listeners today. But allegedly, that is still a part of the mix here, and so the Patriots would have not one but two potential trades prior to next Tuesday's trading deadline to conceivably fill needs. Now, both needs, as they presently stand, do appear to, both deals do appear to fill a need. A, because Ayers looks to be more of an edge guy, as Jeff Howe from Boston Herald just explained. It does look like, you know, the Patriots had to have, it does look like they would have considered Chandler Jones, and his, injury situation over the course of the next month prior to this deal. So that's how far ahead of the curve they are. They're probably already thinking about the next two deals down the line, and we're just still trying to catch up to the first one. He was at practice today. Ayers was. Here's a guy that, if, of course, he's able, and this is the big if, and this is why guys are available like this at this time, because there are flaws, there are problems. Things don't work out with their current team for whatever reason. So you're getting, you know, a dented can off of the shelf, so to speak. That's the why, that's why these guys are available in the first place. You have to hope that your information is good and that you have evaluators that realize there's still something, you know, left in the tank of these players. He certainly looked like a great prospect coming out of school. And then, you know, 2 years ago, he had a really solid year, and then he fell off a bit last year. In fact, he fell off more than just a bit. He fell way off. And he's only been eligible for, you know, two games, or he's only been activated for two games this year for Tennessee. And a lot of that probably has to do with the fact that he's recovering from not one but two patella tendon surgeries. So here's a guy that, while at first you think, oh, Jerod Mayo's done for the year, let's bring in Akeem Ayers, that's not really what's going on here. That's not really what's happening. He's 6'3", 255 pounds. Sounds like he could be that bigger player that could go to the middle and fill in the middle. But I don't believe that that's necessarily his role. And that's why I guess it just seems a little confusing. It also tells me that there must have been a little foresight in knowing about Chandler Jones' situation before going out and getting a guy that, well, size-wise, he certainly looks like he could fill in the middle, but his role really isn't that. His role is really to be an outside guy. His role has been to be an outside guy, and you would think that that's where the Patriots would envision him, especially with the alleged Allen Branch signing, because that is an inside guy. He is a defensive tackle, and you do need some help in the middle stuffing the run, without a doubt. All right, certainly welcome to your thoughts at 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500, webradio at patriots.com, and we'll get to some of the tweets at JR Broadcaster and the Facebook, John.Rook, in just a minute. This one comes from Gopes, who says, John, toward the end of last season and start of this season, you started to lose me. Where did I lose you to? But then he says, your last podcast before the Bengals game was epic. It was so well done and reminded me why I loved listening to you. What was the last podcast before the Bengals game that we did that was so epic, Kev? Do you remember? What did we do? Because if we remember what we did, we should bottle it. I know. It's what I'm thinking. What was it that we did? Anyway, now on to trade talk. I heard Spiller is in the market. Maybe hard to convince the Bills to trade him to the Pats, but if we pull it off, he'd fit in here perfectly. Well, Spiller's hurt right now, so I'm not sure how or even where you'd put him in unless he was healthy. Says he's a lot better runner than anyone we have here. Could catch the ball from the backfield. Last thing I'd say is the Pats over the Bears, 42-20. Brady keeps on rolling. Cutler keeps throwing INTs. All right, thanks, Gopes, for the email. But right now, Spiller's hurt, so I'm not sure where the Patriots would find a fit for someone that's hurt right now. They need healthy bodies. Steven and Colleen says, John, looking at the current state of the Patriots D, where do we get pressure on Cutler? That's an excellent question. And quite frankly, that's the one that I'm having a hard time with right now. I'm not sure where you get pressure on Cutler. And this is why I think the Patriots are going to have trouble. Everybody seems to think this is going to be a rout on Sunday. I'm not buying it. And I'll tell you why I'm not buying it. You must disrupt Jay Cutler to have success. I think with two or more turnovers a game, there's something like 4-18. He's at 4-18 as a starter, and with under two turnovers a game, there's something like what 13-5, something like that. I saw some numbers like that yesterday, day before yesterday, that were significant. You have to turn the guy over to beat him. Generally speaking, not all the time, but the overwhelming majority of the time. I'm not sure where they're going to get the pressure. Steve says, I like the way the offense is trending with getting the ball to players with numbers other than 11 and 87 and feel that if Cutler has a meltdown, then the Pats will get their 40-plus points this game, their 40-burger. Last but not least, what long-shot, totally unexpected trade would you like to see the Patriots pull off other than Sue? Well, I think, you know, I'm not so sure that there's any other one that really makes sense to me. I'm like a lot of other people. I am intrigued by Vincent Jackson. I am intrigued by Larry Fitzgerald, although I don't think either one will happen. But those certainly intrigue me to the point where, you know, I think that would get a rise out of folks, and I think you'd get some newly found interest. Not that there's no interest here, but I think you'd get some real run. And you'd probably get a real buzz running through Patriot Nation if one of those kind of deals happened, if you were able to swing something like that to happen. I just don't know that it happens. And the one that makes the most sense right now is Sue in the middle because of his impact, you know, not only as someone who can stop the run, but as someone who can bring pressure. That's what the Patriots need more than anything right now. And as Jeff Howe told us just a short while ago, you know, that was an error on the part of the Patriots as evaluators in the offseason. Your fellow contending teams go out and address that need in terms of getting after the quarterback. The Patriots did not. It's that simple. It's the only thing that makes any sense at all right now is being able to put pressure on the quarterback. Why else would they go and get Akeem Ayers from Tennessee? Because they need it now more than ever if Chandler Jones is gone for a while. So long shot, totally unexpected trade, I don't think it exists. I wish it would. And again, if one of those deals for a wide receiver, you know, came up, you know, maybe then fundamentally they decide, you know what, we're just going to have to outscore teams, you know, 30-28. Kind of what I'm thinking. Dan in San Antonio. John, surely Bill is looking at the other teams in the AFC and thinking we may be behind here. Surely he's thinking we need to do more to be able to compete in the Super Bowl. So why not go all in on D'Souza or some elite player that can turn our defense to top three overnight? I'm from San Antonio, and as you know, a Spurs fan. Both organizations are identical down to the T. So why have the Spurs' trajectory turned them into a championship-winning team, but the Patriots haven't since 04? Now, remember, both teams have been extremely successful, have the highest winning percentage in all of sports. But the difference in San Antonio, it was 30 seconds away from winning the championship comfortably. Then they followed that by destroying everyone in front of them this year. Now they look like they stand alone without anyone coming to their level. Why have the Patriots not had the same path? Well, I don't know that they're going to necessarily stand alone without anybody coming to their level. I'd have to say that Cleveland in the East has certainly made big moves in coming to their level, you know, by pulling LeBron James away from South Florida. But in the West, you might be right. Look, I'm not sure that I can answer your question. I understand the analogy that you're making, Dan, but there's just, you know, when you have 53 players to worry about as opposed to only 13 on an NBA roster, I think there are a lot of disparate, you know, pieces that you have to have come into place. The threat of major, you know, injury due to contact and due to the violence of the sport is arguably greater than it is in the NBA. Doesn't mean you can't get hurt in the NBA. We know that's, we know that happens. I would just say that because of the way that the Patriots, I don't know that necessarily both organizations are like each other to a T, as you put it. I would say that the Patriots have more of a theory that they can do what they do without the quote with only without the so-called superstars. And I understand that the Spurs are largely building, you know, their team and have built their team a lot like that. But if you look at the Spurs lineup, they do have legitimate superstars, guys that have come into their own while in San Antonio. Well, as New England, name me superstars other than Tom Brady or Vince Wilfork or maybe Darrell Revis. And we're still not even sure about Revis. And the other two superstars are aging and arguably past their prime. So, you know, do they have gas left in the tank? Absolutely. I think the Patriots probably do it more so than the Spurs with what I would call, it's unfair to put this tag on him, but it's probably more of a journeyman-type player than going with a true superstar like pulling in a Ndamukong Suh or Larry Fitzgerald or Vincent Jackson or someone, you know, that really has cachet. And maybe that's just the nature of the beast in the NFL because you have so many other teams, I mean, so many other players that you have to worry about on a roster. Interesting question, Daniel. I'd be interested to know why you think the Patriots haven't, you know, come up to that perceived level. I just don't think the Patriots are willing to go that extra whatever, certainly because some of it is fiscally constrained, but I just don't think they have the mindset to do whatever it takes necessarily to win a championship. They want to win a championship as bad as anybody else, but they want to do it within their system. And I think there's a difference. Richard says, I'm not sure the Lions would deal Sue, then have to face him later in the year as the Lions and Patriots meet. Undoubtedly, and thank you, Richard, in Louisville, undoubtedly that will probably be a deciding factor if there was ever discussion in the first place. If you're looking at it from the Lions' point of view, well, why would we trade him to a team that we're gonna face? And the answer to that is, well, you wouldn't. Unless, of course, the Patriots had somebody specifically that they would want in addition to a draft pick. And as I was mentioning in the opening hour of the program, you got to have two teams that are on the same page with the dance card, and that doesn't happen a lot. It's very difficult to go player for player trade, as Jeff Howe pointed out. It's almost as difficult to go player for pick trade. That's how hard it is really to trade these days. Money has to work. Need has to match. It's just it's difficult to make deals. Guys are usually picked up for low-end, low-round draft picks like the Patriots, you know, did yesterday with Ayers, who don't figure into their former team's game plan at all. So look at the guys that have not been activated much or have figured prominently in the Patriots' plans. Aaron Dobson's name has come up a couple of times in this show. Perhaps rightfully so. But is there a team out there that has a wide receiver need? If you can identify a team that has a wide receiver need, okay, do they have something then in return that the Patriots would want to go after? And right now, the Patriots' major need is up the middle defensively, bar none. Isn't it funny? It just dawned on me here. Isn't it funny how 2 weeks ago we were talking about how the offensive line was going to make or break this team this year, and now the offensive line is one of the least of our worries right now? I find that the height of irony because we're just 2 weeks away. And yet, last week, they still were without their two key personnel on that line recovering from injury in Brian Stork and Dan Connolly. And even Cameron Fleming was still out nursing the broken finger. Now, all three of those guys have returned this week to practice as of today, but Now the needs are much greater. We're turning to another area. It's because with those guys allegedly coming back this week with the Patriots, barring any further setbacks, that all of a sudden doesn't become the greatest need. The Patriots seem to have solved some of their offensive woes over the last 3 to 4 weeks, and we've seen that from Tom Brady's performance. They scored 27 points in 20 minutes of possession time against the Jets last Thursday night. They have the ball 30 minutes, half the game. They might get close to that 40 burger that everybody's talking about. That just kind of popped in my head. I'm kind of like, wow, that's actually, we're not even thinking of it. Here's Michael in Chicago. Michael, you're in the playbook.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Hey, Michael.
Hey, I was just calling in, you know, see if this makes any sense to you. But, you know, I'm not too much into maybe bringing a flashy player in. We're at a Super Bowl hunt. We need bodies. Okay?
Yeah.
I would like to see him bring in maybe like a Justin Tuck, somebody to get after a pass rusher, and maybe go out and get another blue chip linebacker, you know, and maybe a guard or something for depth.
I think Tuck would actually be a good get. We mentioned him several times on yesterday's show as well. We talked about 18 different names, you know, mm-hmm. on Tuesday's show. If you didn't get a chance to listen, go back.
I listen every day.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But just, you know, for anybody who would be listening today that didn't, we talked about a lot of different names. His name came up a lot. It's a deal that I think that could potentially make sense, at least from a personnel point of view. And you know, from the Patriots side. Now, how does it work from the Oakland side? That's the big issue.
Yeah, I mean, I would, if there was a blockbuster trade I'd like to see him make a move in, I would like to see him go get AP. I don't care what's going on. He'll be back.
I think he'll be back. I think he'll be back. I also think somebody's going to take a gander at Ray Rice. You know, whether you think that's right or wrong is not a.
Didn't Robert Kraft say he'll never play for him?
I believe he did say that here. Yes, I believe he was quoted as saying that. I don't expect that Ray Rice will be here.
Crow and take him, you know?
Somebody will pick him up. I wouldn't have too much of a problem with Adrian Peterson. You know, I realize that it's a cultural thing in terms of why he was, set down for what he did.
Oh, imagine AP back there and they're having to respect somebody like that.
Well,
that would be a
blockbuster. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, I think Larry Fitz is just I just think he's a little too slow at this point, and trading for him is just, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't mind it. It's just I need somebody a little bit younger, and I think that we're just trying to. I think Justin Tuck will be a perfect fit. He comes around that edge. He screams around that edge, and if Allen Branch could stay, help out with Vince Wilfork in the middle, you know, that'll be good. You know, and get another linebacker. You know, Akeem Ayers, I do like him. He didn't have that good of a combine, but I did watch some college tape on him yesterday. He did look explosive. You know, so I mean, he could be helpful.
Well, he could be. He could be very helpful. I just think that, you know, right now, you have to look at the defensive side of the ball. As much as we focused on offense and trying to kickstart that thing a couple of weeks ago, we've seen enough signs, I think, over the last 2 to 3 weeks or even 3 weeks plus now, where you're thinking, all right, it's coming around. Progress is being made, but now you've got some serious injuries to talk about on the defensive side of the ball. This is, and you can actually heal yourself quickly if you make the right moves before the trading deadline.
Or how about they go and reach for like maybe a Polamalu?
Well, could you pray? I mean, I don't know what his contract situation is. Could he be pried away from Pittsburgh?
I mean, possibly.
I don't know that he really fulfills the need. I mean, yeah.
He'd love in a box and make plays.
You'd love to have it. But see, they kind of ask, they kind of have that role already right now for Pat Chung. They look at Chung right now as really being more of a linebacker than a safety anyway. That's what he does best.
Like Chung. He's too little. He lost, you know, that just, it still eats me when he let Eli Manning throw that bomb on him in the Super Bowl. I just hate him for that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I just don't like Chung. I mean, that's my person. I mean, I understand. You like Chung. You have your person.
No, it has nothing to do with like or dislike. Chung has done a better job, I think, during his second tour of duty with the Patriots than he did in his first tour of duty.
No, I mean, yeah, I have watched him. He has been tougher in the run. In the past, I still see a little bit of the same. You know, he never really been a big pass guy. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we need somebody to rush that passer. Help the Rel Revis out. We need somebody to come around that edge, and I think Justin Tuck will be it. Because I remember when they played Oakland, he was screaming around that edge.
Yeah.
You know, and mm-hmm. they got Khalil Mack over there. You know, I think they're all right with him. I think Oakland and them don't they got some relationship with Oakland?
Well, they seem to have because they fleeced him a couple of times, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think Justin Tuck, he could pry him away from over there. You know, I think I mean, like you said, you got to have, they have to have somebody that they want from you. You know, and since, I mean, Oakland doesn't need a receiver. They have all big receivers. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's the only thing we could really give her at this point.
Well, that's really, I think, all that we have that would be, let's just say, of that's what we have stocked on the shelf that we have too much of.
Yeah.
You know, we have guys that
Nova has some sniff of value right now.
Right.
Let's just skip him out of town.
Right. And if you also take a look at what you have on a practice squad, that would also indicate it. And you've got Josh Boyce who's sitting there on the practice squad. So
Boyce was what, a second rounder?
Yeah.
Third rounder?
Right. So you're still, I mean, that's what you have. You got to find, you have to find a trading partner that could still use somebody that you have a lot of.
Yeah, I mean, I think still offensive line, still, like you said, we're not talking about it, but I still think we need it is a need.
Keep in mind, well, I agree with you, and I'd love to get Tuck, but keep in mind, they did, Oakland did pick up Kenbrell Tompkins. So they've already dipped into the Patriots, used parts bag once already.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they like people from anybody's getting a player from New England, they know that they're well-coached, and if New England likes them, that means they're smart.
In theory, I would agree with you. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, but I think Tuck is the one. Like you said, I mean, I would like to see a big name player come here, but I don't know. I think it'll bring too much drama and too much expectation and too much weight on the shoulders. Get a couple blue chip players, get a push in the playoffs, maybe get another running back. I do like Gray. Gray's big, and I give Gray a chance. And if he doesn't work out, okay. You know, it's
right,
what we got to do. Get a couple blue chip players. Don't blow up the media.
But the question now is, though, Michael, I mean, giving guys a chance, does it cost you a championship along the way if you're going to take the time to give them that chance? I mean, you need guys that are proven right now that can perform and can play at a winning level if you're going to get to a championship.
Well, get Tuck and get McFadden. Find a way to make that happen. I do like McFadden. He's an all-time sprinter. You know, I mean, he is powerful between the tackles, and he could get out there on the edge on you.
I actually think that the Patriots, you know, personnel-wise, have enough different parts to where they're fine on offense. That doesn't mean that they won't go out and try to make it better, but
that's
I don't think that's the need. I think they got to focus on getting your boy Tuck or someone like that that would help, you know, fill the bill. Because I guess we don't really know enough about Branch and whether or not, because he has traveled quite a bit over the last 5 years, we don't really know what he can give you, and at least until he gets here.
Not to cut you off, do they have enough cap space to get Tuck and to go get maybe another blue chip linebacker?
Well, it depends on what you mean by blue chip. I mean,
somebody that could come in, maybe just a guy maybe not like Jerome Mayo, but just a tackling guy.
Somebody like that isn't available because, you know, the only guys that are available are guys that either A, are on the street, or B, not playing for their current teams. So getting someone with blue chip status, that indicates to me somebody who's at least a starter somewhere else. That isn't going to happen. You'd have to price somebody loose based on their contract. And if you could price somebody loose based on the contract that they currently have with their team, that doesn't necessarily mean that that team's still going to be willing to give them up.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see him go get like a Vilma. Go get a Jonathan.
Jonathan Vilma's already said he's done.
Oh, he's done?
Yeah, he's already said he's done. He's done with football. I've seen that in a couple of places. I thought originally that would have been a good idea too, but he said he's retired.
Yeah. Is there any other linebackers, a free agent linebacker out there? Maybe we could just grab this halfway decent. I mean, something.
Honestly, I'm scouring just like you are right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'll do more studies at home, John. But, I mean, I don't mean to take up this much time.
That's all right, man. I understand. You're like everybody else out there. You're wondering, what can we do? Thank you, Michael. It's good stuff today. You know, and I'm not sure that there's a definitive answer. Gabe from Newtown, Pennsylvania, writes in. He says, John, okay, so the D takes another hit. We pick up another kid with leg issues. But, hey, I've been looking at tape on the kid. He looks really good. Wisenhunt is stupid for putting this kid on the bench. Whatever. Whatever. He says, John, how do you feel about Zach Moore? Is he Jones 2.0, 6'6", 275? Can he fill in? Next man up. Well, he's going to have to. You know, Zach Moore has shown, I think, at least in flashes this year, given his short opportunities, that he looks like he certainly can be active. He's going to get more than just a fair chance to be active. That will undoubtedly start this week against Chicago. And like I said, that's what worries me the most about this game on Sunday, is being able to put pressure on Jay Cutler. You've got to bother him to beat him. Gabe says, to me, it doesn't matter if we pick up a star wideout because if Brady doesn't have time to throw it to him, it's a waste. That's why Timms isn't on the field much. I say get a left guard or a left tackle to help Solder and thus give Brady more time, Timms more plays, stretching the field, and thus helps the run game and so on. My voice is for an offensive beast guard. Otherwise, a star running back wide receiver is a waste. Nothing else will matter. Oh, and trade Brady? I remember when I was a kid and we traded Jim Plunkett to the Niners. Then we traded Danny White. Now you want to take the best QB we have ever had the past decade and a half for what? Does a handful of beans come to mind? Even if you get the Porsche and the Mercedes for him, what good is it with no gas to drive them? That's a nice analogy. Brady is the gas that drives the offense. Oh, and Montana was done. Brady is not done. Funny how nobody said that 30 years ago when Montana was traded. I don't remember a single soul saying that Joe Montana was done. All right. Thank you, Gabe. I mean, a soul. I'd love, you know, somebody find me an instance where somebody said he's done before he was traded. Just one. It's all I need. Just one. Please. Max in San Diego says, John, now you know me to be a true and loyal Pats fan. I wore my jersey in Iraq when I was a young Marine serving there watching the Super Bowl. So, you know, I'm a tell it like it is. There's no friggin' way the Pats trade Brady to Houston or anybody else for any reason, because two things will happen. There would be a rebellion in New England among Pats fans, and it will be nasty. He's going to lead the way. I think Max is going to lead the way. Brady has much more left in the tank, and the so-called experts know where they can go and what they can do with themselves. Damn it. They're paid much more than I love you, Max. You're awesome. They're paid much more than I am to shake up the NFL fan base. But if it's a common sense-based pissing contest between me and them, well, I win by a decisive victory. I want their reasoning behind their fantasy of trading Brady to be based on something impressive like knowledge of what Brady or Mr. Kraft or even Bill's thoughts are. Says it's ignorant as hell to say that they'll do that with no evidence alluding to that in the way of credible sources by the so-called experts, and they know better. Come on, man. Hoorah! I love it. Max, you're awesome. You're absolutely awesome. Passionate to a T. And I got to tell you, I feel really good about our armed forces if there are more guys like you out there. That's a hell of an attitude. I like it. Garland writes in to say, John, I like the Allen Branch acquisition. It'll give the Pats a run stuffer in the middle. Also, when Salinga returns, he'll have a pretty stout defensive line. The loss of Chandler Jones for a month is unfortunate. However, I have always felt he was a bit overrated. It's kind of hard to overrate a guy, Garland, when he leads your team in sacks and quarterback hits and pressures. Let's not forget pressures, because pressures force a quarterback to release the ball early. I don't know how you can overrate him. I mean, you know, maybe it's because he doesn't seem as flamboyant. I don't know. I'm not sure why that would be. I suppose I can see your side, but, you know, the fact of the matter is he's the best that you got. That's a big loss. I'm not sure how they're going to compensate for it. Next man up? Well, it's easy to say that, next man up, but when the next man up is the equivalent of, Waterboy, then, you know, it's. I'm not sure. I just don't know. He says maybe easily and replace him on the outside if he's healthy. Well, I definitely think, see, here's a good one, and we haven't really spoken a lot about this because I think he's just sort of an X factor right now, but Dominic Easley is definitely going to be one of those guys that's going to figure into this new mix, whatever it may be, whether it's a 3-4, a 4-3, a 5-2, you know, a 3-4 look, an 8-man, for whatever it's going to be, and we don't even really know what the Patriots are going to throw at the Bears. We just don't know right now because we're not even sure what the personnel is right now. Maybe this actually would turn out to benefit the Patriots because the Bears aren't entirely sure what they're going to face. Maybe that's part of the sleight of hand involved here in game planning for Sunday. We're talking about all these personnel moves, and yes, you got a game plan, and you got to prepare for this team. Easley is going to be a part of it, however, without a doubt. He has to be. Now, has he been unspectacular? Well, yeah. What have they asked him to do, really? They've really asked him to play tackle more than end. We're thinking that, you know, perhaps that was going to be his place. So he'll probably figure into the rotation a bit more, but he's not really an end. He's supposed to be one of those tackles that can get penetration, collapse a pocket, maybe force a quarterback out of his comfort zone and put him into the waiting hands of one of your ends. We really haven't seen him have that kind of effect yet. He's going to get an opportunity to continue improving on that. Garland continues by saying, in my opinion, the Pats will be stronger on defense when Jones and Salinga return. Next 6 weeks will tell us what this team is made of. There's no doubt about that, Garland. And there's no question, you are correct. Pats will be stronger when Jones and Salinga return. Problem is, that's at least a month away. Salinga isn't probably going to come back until after the bye week. So that being said, you're looking at 1, 2. You're looking at 3 weeks right there, minimum. Jones is probably another, you know, as the reports have said, 4 to 6. And usually you can always go to the long side of that, and largely that's just being, that's being conservative. Guys don't return quicker than they usually do. It usually takes them longer to come back. And because you're now biting into the real meat of your schedule over the next 6 games, and you know, these injuries come at a really, really bad time. This is when guys have to suck it up and play. And that's unfortunate. Brian says, I still think one of our most glaring needs is a safety who can cover the middle and tight ends. When a team gashes us with a pass, it's usually in the middle and it's usually a tight end. That needs to stop. Other needs, well, a veteran defensive presence who can handle the green dot. This was obviously the issue the Pats had last year when Mayo went down. I'm just not sure Hightower or Collins are ready for that kind of responsibility. Well, but the guy that's going to handle the green dot, though, Brian, has to have, you know, an intricate knowledge of the Patriots' formations and the calls defensively. You can't expect somebody new to come in and have that kind of presence without knowledge of the playbook. I don't think there's anybody out there that could do that. The one guy that might come close might be a guy like Dane Fletcher, who we talked about as one of those players yesterday that could come back. But is he the kind of guy that's going to play the middle? Probably not. And would you really expect someone who's had his head ensconced in someone else's playbook to come in and lead your team by example? I doubt that seriously. Hightower's the guy. I don't think Collins is necessarily the guy. Collins had to do it because Hightower was out for a while, too, as you'll recall a couple weeks ago. But now that Hightower's back, Hightower's the man. He's the guy that has to assume that responsibility. He did it last year, so at least he has a working knowledge. Brian also says, a running back who's more like Ridley than less like Vereen. The problem with Vereen is I don't really see him as a competent replacement for Ridley. He's great catching wheel route passes. But running down the opponent's throats? No, I see him stoned too far often. Now, that may very well be due to the offensive line woes this year and spending more time worrying about giving Brady more than 2 seconds to go through his options. excuse me. That's interesting. I don't disagree with you. I don't know that he is, you know, he's definitely the replacement for Ridley. He's the first option for Ridley. He's not the same kind of back as Ridley. Could they find the same kind of back? I'm of the opinion they have that already in a guy like James White, but I don't think that they have James White ready to go. Or I don't think they feel like he's ready to go and be, you know, a two down, much less a three down back. Now, you could solve that problem if you go after a guy like LeGarrette Blount. That was, again, one of the names we mentioned in Tuesday's show. Guy that might be disgruntled in Pittsburgh, might want, you know, some playing time. I mean, frankly, you know, I do think some of the problems up front have to do with the line as opposed to, you know, the back. But even if you go get a guy like Blount who just, you know, pounds you to death, as we saw last year, that might eliminate some of that problem. And then Brian wraps up by saying, beyond that, the trade Brady to Texans is laughable. Sort of like when someone gets a cherished family heirloom praised, it's worth way less than they think. Still has a ton of personal value. And I think Brady's not only still an exceptionally talented quarterback, but he's also worth a ton to Pats Nation. So in that regard, I'd want 2 first-rounders and a Pro Bowl player at minimum. Beyond that, I'd hang up on anybody. And then again, I'm not the head coach of the Patriots, and emotional attachment can break a franchise. But for me personally, Brady's worth more to me as a Patriot than the suggested trade returns. Brian, thank you. Writing to us from Essex, Vermont. That's actually pretty well thought out. And I love your analogy. Your analogy is dead, solid, perfect. To borrow a phrase from one of my favorite writers, Dan Jenkins. Tom Brady is the Patriots' cherished family heirloom. And we hold him in the highest regard the highest esteem. He's worth more to us than to anybody else in the NFL, period. I think that's something we probably can all agree upon. He's probably worth a lot to a lot of other teams too, but he's worth more to the Patriots. That being said, emotional attachment can break a franchise. You wrote it, Brian. I've been trying to say that, and I've had, you know, Facebook posters and textbook, you know, texters and emailers and even some phone calls, you know, basically, you know, decrying the fact that I even bring up such sacrilege in the course of conversation. Look, I'm as big a Patriot fan as anybody else. I've worked 22 years for this franchise. It's a heck of a lot more fun to go to work when the team is succeeding as opposed to when it's not succeeding. Now, I know that New Englanders have a general lockhold on being, you know, gripers and moaners and bitchers and things like that. That's why we have Nitpick Tuesday, because New Englanders do that as well as anybody. I think the analogy I used was, hell, we had people arguing the fact that we should have beaten the Revolutionary Army of the Redcoats back in 1776 in a lot less time than we did. We complain about everything. But in this particular instance, I'm trying to look at it right down the middle from both sides. And having covered the NFL for better than 30 years in my own right, I got to tell you, it's happened before. History always repeats itself. Look throughout history, whether you're talking sports or otherwise, look throughout history. It always repeats itself. There's always somebody that gets to be full of themselves. You know, there's always dictators, you know, that always get taken down. There's always great players who fade in the end in sports, and, you know, it's always a rough ending for them. It never goes easily. It never goes the way you want it to go. Emotional attachment can break a franchise. I'd hate to see this franchise broken and sent back into the Stone Age over an emotional attachment just because you say so. I want to continue to see the team progress and do what it's done, largely over the last 20 years now, but certainly over the last 15, and not only stay competitive, but like you, everybody here wants to see this team ultimately win the big one again. And I certainly think that that will happen. The only question is when and how do you get there? And that's kind of what we're discussing. Good email, good thought-provoking email there, Brian. Howard in Stratford, Connecticut says, John, where are the current needs of this team? QB, no. Running back, no. Tight end, no. Although he says even though Ridley went down, I believe Jonas Gray was on the practice squad for just that reason. Wide receiver, not really. Offensive line, if they could get healthy, probably not. Kicker, no. Punter, no. Safety, no. DB, no. Linebacker, yes. Depth has taken a hit with Salinga and Jones down. Yes, depth on the defensive line. I think you meant it the other way around. Salinga and Jones line, and with Mayo going down, yes, linebacker depth. So basically the two areas of need are the exact two areas they have addressed in the last 2 days. Now, do Branch and Ayers make a difference? Well, only time will tell. As far as the hypotheticals mentioned, well, Brady to Houston for a first-rounder and Andre Johnson makes a ton of sense if they decide to move him. I don't think they will. I would like TB12 to finish his career here. But if it happens, I wouldn't be surprised, nor will it impact my Patriot fandom, as at the end of the day, to quote Jerry Seinfeld, we all cheer and root for clothes. And that's true. Well, root for laundry. I don't think the Lions will ever trade Sue this year, as they're still in the mix. He's not disgruntled. That's also true. Howard, it's also very true. The question is, are they willing to lose him to free agency? I'm not sure that that has been determined. I don't think Fitzgerald will be traded either, but Jackson is a possibility. Just don't think it's a probability. Perhaps if the Pats threw in Dobson, a talented young wideout who might just need a change of venue, they could pry away a player from some other team. But what is his value? I can't much believe that it's there since he's at the bottom of the depth chart. One man's garbage is another man's treasure. Howard, sometimes your emails just make too much sense, cutting right to the thick of the matter. Let's go to Yamil in the Bronx, New York. Did I say that right, Yamil?
Yes, you did, sir.
Hey, welcome into the playbook. How's it going?
Hey, how you doing? I have a question. Actually, a trade idea.
Okay.
How about we try to pry one of the pass rushers from the Giants for Amendola? They just lost Victor Cruz, and now they need a wide receiver.
Well, without looking at the Giants players up front or their contractual situation, is there somebody that's obtainable?
Well, JPP hasn't been the consistent player that they always wish for.
Do you really think the Giants are going to give up on him?
Throwing a pick? Maybe.
Well, how long is he under contract? Do we know that?
I have no idea.
See, that's why I'm saying. You got to figure out what the particular contractual situation is. I don't see them giving up on him. He's still, I think, got the potential to be a difference maker type of player. Now, if you were to tell me maybe a guy like Mathias Kiwanuka, that might be a little bit more reasonable because he's been around a little bit longer. Now, I don't know what his contractual situation would be, but that to me would be a guy that might be obtainable.
Okay.
But again, without knowing what his contractual situation is, this is all speculation. See, we can sit up there and we can throw, you know, darts at a dartboard and say, hey, that'd be cool, let's try that one. But it's not realistic, and we'd be wasting our time spinning our wheels on it. That's why if there's a player out there that might have a heavy, laden contract that a team isn't going to be wanting to pick up beyond this year, that's your red flag right now. That's what you have to look at right now. And if that is the case, if that's the case, then what do you have in particular that they might need? Then you might find a player-for-player type of trade as a possibility.
Okay.
That's it. Plain and simple.
One more thought.
Sure.
On Stu. How about a second-round pick and Dominic Easley?
Well, you know, I think any time – let's just say that the Lions, for argument's sake here, let's say the Lions would be willing to let him go. Definitely the Lions would be needing something to replace him in return. And so, yeah, Dominic Easley could be potentially one of those guys. But, again, you're talking about a guy that's damaged goods right now because, you know, we still don't know what the full effect of his knee surgeries have been. But you definitely have to say that either Easley or, you know, Jones or a Villano or someone like that would have to probably be a part of that, because then what would the Lions use to replace his absence in the lineup?
Okay.
Right? Make sense?
Of course.
Okay. So, again, you know, in a perfect world, yeah, absolutely. But, again, you got to have two sides that are thinking the same way. And that's why it's so hard to pull off trades. It's just so incredibly hard. I mean, it's why you don't see many of them. And the trades you do see are guys that usually come in that are considered afterthoughts, or they're off the scrap heap, and you get them for next to nothing, like a low-round draft pick or just picking up their contracts, which is what happened in Akeem Ayers particular instance.
Okay.
All right. Good stuff, Yamil, and thanks for calling. Here's our buddy Melvin in Tennessee. Hey, Melvin.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Melvin.
Yeah, I just got a quick question as far as the trade and stuff like that go. I know you've probably talked about it, because I'm just catching in, but as far as the running back situation goes, do you feel like the Patriots are in need of trading for a running back? Are there enough? Do you feel like a Felix Jones or something like that? I don't know. I know that was mentioned, on another show that I was listening to. Do you feel like you can get with the Felix Jones and the guys you got, that'll be good enough? Or do you feel like you need to address the running back issue?
I don't think you have to address the running back issue, I'll be honest with you. I just don't think it's necessary right now. I think that's part of the reason why they brought up Jonas Gray, because they envisioned him as an emailer just pointed out. I think they envisioned him as Ridley's eventual replacement. They still look at Vereen as a third down guy. Now, Vereen got the majority of the snaps last week, but I think they're trying to work a guy like Gray into the mix. Now, if it turns out that is not the case after a week or two. Well, you know, first of all, you'd have to address it before Tuesday, otherwise a trade isn't going to happen. I just don't know that that's something that's really high on the priority list right now. Let's get Marcus in Kansas City in here. Marcus, welcome into the playbook.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, Marcus.
Look, man, I'm telling you, we got two good players right here in Kansas City that I know for a fact they're not going to re-sign Eric Berry next year. It's not going to happen. And they drafted D Ford here in Kansas City just strictly to replace Tom Bahali because of age and the contract. So, I mean, I know it would probably cost a little bit of draft picks or something like that, but I think it'd be a good move for them to go ahead and make.
So you think that both Berry and Hali could be made available?
I'm positive because, you know, Eric Berry's contract is actually up at the end of this season. Tomba has still 2 years left on his deal, I believe, but Eric Berry guaranteed, and I just don't see him signing back just because he hasn't really panned out to what they thought he would be here in Kansas City.
Sure.
You know, I could see it happening.
Okay.
On both ends. And then Tomba, just strictly age-wise, and his contract's a little bit bigger. And plus, they picked up D Ford in the draft.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Both players' names came up yesterday. So I think it's entirely, you know, it's entirely possible, but those names have probably been kicked around. But again, you know, Kansas City, A, has to be willing to make the deal, number one. Number two, do the Patriots think enough of those particular players in an effort to go after and get them and give up a premium for them in return? And again, that's where you rely on your own evaluation principles and prospects to make something like that happen. I would love to see either one of those players. In fact, both of those players were mentioned. They were part of our 18-player grouping that were mentioned in Tuesday's playbook as to be potential possibilities or players that you would like, that some fans would like to see, you know, put on a Patriot uniform. You just got to wonder if the Patriots feel the same way. Bob Sosia's show is coming up here in just a couple of moments off the top of the hour. But what we will also have, you know, you might want to make sure that you stay tuned for that, because I've got a couple of special guests that are coming in. In fact, Bob's jumping into the studio right now. So I know you've got something, you got a couple of good things, it looks like, that are in the works, Bob.
Well, let's hope so, John. Rob Ninkovich is standing by, literally standing by. Although he just stepped out.
I saw him. He walked in and he's like, oh, I'm ready to go, guys. Oh, you're just a little bit early. And that never happens. So.
You know, but better to anticipate the snap count and be here early for our show. No offsides for getting here early, right, as a defensive end.
Be a good question to get his perspective on where he thinks this team could use some help right now, given the injury situation and everything else that's going on.
And what do you think that Rob Ninkovich or any other Patriot might say when asked that question?
Oh, I think we're just fine as we are. I think we got everybody we need right here.
I think Bill's the GM, and the players are smart enough to let Bill make that decision.
Of course.
And speculate.
Well, of course, yeah. Of course. But, you know, hey, it'd be interesting to see what a player's perspective would be, because, you know, frankly, this has got to be a little bit of a nervous time for some guys, and other guys have to be looking at this as an opportunity, because trade deadline come up, if you're not really happy where you are, and maybe you've talked to your management about moving on so you can, you know, get some playing time somewhere else, there's liable to be some other deals made.
Well, you know, unfortunately, football doesn't have generally the kind of wheeling and dealing we became accustomed to for so long in Major League Baseball, for example, on the doorstep of the non-waiver trade deadline in late July. And it's rare in the NFL to see a deal really have an impact. Last year, of course, the Pats got Isaac Sopowaga. A lot of people point to the Aqib Talib deal, but that was really an interesting set of circumstances surrounding him. And maybe Vincent Jackson is a guy who elicits a lot of excitement, because there is a possibility that the Bucks, considering their situation, might be willing to trade a Vincent Jackson. But you don't really see the marquee guys moving this time of the year in the NFL, at least it seems to me.
No, you don't. It's so difficult to do that because of the value and, you know, contracts and everything else that's out there. You know, plus you got to get two teams that are willing to dance. And you don't find a lot of teams that are on the same dance card. You know, there's a lot of teams just don't have the same similarities. They've got different agendas out there. It's really difficult to find a player for player trade in the NFL because of salary cap and everything else that's out there.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're talking about a lot of names of guys who are on contending teams right now. So that in and of itself, when you're talking about an Ndamukong Suh with a Detroit team that's 5-2.
Who wouldn't love to see that? Right? Who wouldn't love to see that?
Talk about the Kansas City team now coming off a good win over San Diego,
yeah,
fighting for a playoff spot.
Yeah.
A lot of that's pie in the sky, I think. But nonetheless, it's nice to entertain.
Well, that's what we try to do.
Absolutely.
But we also,
for this business.
But we try to also bring a little perspective to it all, because what you have to realize is that for everybody out there that says, hey, let's go out and get rid of Aaron Dobson and trade him to somebody because we're not using him. Well, you got to find somebody on the other end who likes Aaron Dobson.
Well, you know, and again, Aaron Dobson, the second-year player for the Pats. But the nice thing about what I have to do on Sunday is I only have to worry about the 53 guys that are on the roster at present and the 46 who are active for the game for both the Bears and the New England Patriots.
You're lucky. We have to worry about 600 and some odd players here every week. Oh, well, how come you don't know about that guy? He's available. All right, Bob Sosia's show is coming up next. Rob Ninkovich is going to join him, so you want to stay tuned for that. Thanks to Jeff Howe from the Boston Herald for joining the discussion today. It was kind of here, there, and everywhere, but that's really the way it is right now. With the trade deadline still approaching next Tuesday, Patriots making a couple of making two off-the-blockbuster type deals yesterday after we left the program. I still think there's time and the wherewithal for another one before next Tuesday. What say you? We'll get into that a little bit more tomorrow, and the focus completely on the Bears tomorrow. It's Prediction Thursday in the playbook, and the Chicago Bears coming up.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2